Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 872, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. I am a humble monkey, sitting up in here again. But then came the day. Walking tall, head high up and singing. I went to the city, car horns, corners, and the gritty. Now I am the proudest monkey. Monkey see, monkey do, yeah. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and this is my co-host Josh Flanagan.
Hi.
And welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 872. And hey, look, 2 weeks in a row, joining us in the third chair this week again is Dr. Ryan Haupt.
And we'll see if 2 weeks is more than Josh wants or needs by the end of the episode.
I think we had that answer before the show.
Well, the viewers at home.
It was a verbal altercation. It wasn't recorded. Sorry. Every week, one of us picks a book like the best from the stack of comics they read. We call it the pick of the week. We'll talk about that book. We'll talk about the other books from the week, the patron picks, and listener mail if we have time. And here's your spoiler warning. Exercise some caution because it's a review show. Ryan, you had the pick of the week.
Yes, I'm told that I did. And I did indeed select a pick. And that pick was, I wasn't thinking about my patron power at all.
Ryan's going through a little personal turmoil at home. Nothing bad, but it's a long day, and I think you're going to hear it.
People are coughing, people are sick, I'm expected to sign contracts, money is changing hands, there's a lot going on. But it did not prevent the pick of the week from being The Ambassadors Issue 1 by Mark Miller, Frank Quitely, with Clem Robbins on letters. Frank Quitely did both the art and the colors, and... I assume both of you read this because it's a Mark Miller number one, or is that not still a thing we get at least a little excited for?
I don't read them on purpose, but I don't usually read Mark Miller number ones. However, as my good friend Connor said to me, it's not often you get a Frank Quitely book, and that didn't require a lot of convincing.
Yeah, and I felt like that was the part of this book that struck me first and foremost was this is good, Quitely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting, though. It's slightly different, Quitely, because he's also coloring it, and he's putting texture into the colors, which is something I don't normally enjoy. But, you know, it's also, to be fair, he's only doing this issue, not surprisingly.
Oh.
But, yeah, it's a different artist for every issue of the series.
Well, he started this in 2015.
Right. You know, the thing about Miller, and I think this book exemplifies it, is that, you know, he still has a million ideas. They're often fun, but I think he's trending back to the more hyper-violent and edgy Miller. Like, he sort of goes with the tides of the consensus of the day. I remember in the beginning, we were doing a fanboy. It was like Wanted era. He was and Kick-Ass. It was very like nihilistic and violent. And
I mean, he's literally brought back Nemesis, which
And then there was like a really great period in the middle where he sort of switched gears, and it was like some like Starlight and Huck.
He's doing different
really
genres.
Like sort of heartfelt, happy, super, you know, adventure, superhero, mm-hmm. sci-fi tales. And I think he's trending back towards where he was previously. And it's not my favorite. It's not my favorite. So that's probably why I don't read as much anymore these days as I usually do.
I wouldn't say it's my favorite either, but this team in particular, I mean, you know, I first was exposed to this team when they were doing Authority, at taking over from Warren Ellis and Brian Hitch. So, you know, I have some nostalgia for this team working together.
God, I hated those books.
I actually thought that was a step down from the Ellis and Hitch era. And I would stand by that even today, but that was my first exposure to them. But then I discovered things like We Three and All-Star Superman and really felt, and I know those are two Grant Morrison books, but I fell in love with Quietly's art, I think a little later than his Authority run. And this book, I thought, you know, I think what you said, Connor, is correct. And I think it sort of feels like the recombination of a couple different ideas that Mark Miller has explored in previous books. And the one that I felt that was, I think he's probably riffed on previous iterations of the idea before, but it felt somewhat fresh in this particular issue, was the using a fake Superman trying to make like films and movies to scare the Russians, and clearly hinting at like George Reeves' assassination was a government operation. And then the American government assuming that the person to figure out how to give superpowers to people would be American, that they could co-opt it. And it turns out it's this Korean woman who was in prison, but she figures out how to sort of give herself powers. And she, the plot of the book is everyone wants to figure out how to give people superpowers so they can use them for the military. And she says, no, I'm just going to give superpowers to good people. And there's only a couple of them that are going to get it. And so I guess each issue is going to be sort of the audition of people trying to get access to these powers that she's making available. And then it ends with a you know, badass in the bar being hyper violent, making dudes poop themselves before he kills them, and then he says pay my bill and leaves. And that, to me, it almost kind of ruined it for me, because I'm like, oh, I don't know that I needed that aspect of it, but okay.
Yeah, so
well, you made a pick of the week, so you
so the I mean, it's for Quietly. The step back, I think, is the general premise is there supposedly are no superpowers. Governments have been trying to create them, and like Ryan said, they've been creating propaganda to make their enemies think they have them, like the fake Superman videos. And then this woman in Korea succeeds in doing it. She's not a government agent. She's just a private, super rich, super smart citizen who's also happens to be in jail for fraud. And then they basically say at the book, it's Willy Wonka with superpowers. It's like there's going to be six people who get the golden ticket to get superpowers. But then it ends with this dude in the bar who clearly has superpowers. So that was a little confusing, but clearly will be an important plot point. But yeah, that was my least favorite. It was fine, like beautiful. And I really like looking at how Quietly's art has evolved. And it's fun to look at what he does. But, you know, story-wise, I thought it was okay.
I think my thought was starting it, just like beginning. And now that I just looked at a page, and I know that I noticed that Quietly did the colors too, and it looks a little like early color, like it's fuzzy in places when there's skin. It doesn't look right when he doesn't do it flat. When he does it flat, it looks awesome anyway, and his color palette's great anyway. The first segment with the super smart monkey, and he breaks into the, like, I was 100% into that.
Yeah,
and then that page, like the page turn where, you know, he calmly puts his hand up, and then you go to, there's a full page of him holding that truck up in the air, you know, with his powers, and the spotlight is now. That is what would you give to have that page on your wall? You know, just right. Like, it is a beautiful image. And I was like, hell yes, here we go. And then the other bit, it feels like, now I would like to be really pithy and say, yeah, he's just doing blank and name that comic. I can't quite do that. But it feels very familiar.
Yeah, I felt that too.
The second half of the story feels, I can't put my finger on it because I think it's a lot of different things, but it feels like stuff I've read that I didn't love. So the woman, the with the powers who are giving them out, like, she reminds me of remember the Asian lady in the Watchmen TV shows who, like, had in, not shows, the show. I forget her name.
The Vietnamese woman, Ozymandias' daughter?
Yes. And she, you know, like, shows up and she runs the big company and she, you know, like, buys the baby, I think. like, she reminded me of that. That's instantly who I pictured, because like she had some like singular name or something like that.
Lady True.
Yeah, there you go. Lady True. Like, it reminded me of that. Like it was, I heard and pictured that woman in the part. The, you know, the guy in the bar, I was like, that's just Cole Cash with superpowers, or Jesse Custer or whatever. And part of me has to be like, what are you doing superheroes again for, Mark Miller?
I had that feeling a little bit too, yeah.
Yeah, but I also think that that's an unrealistic request. He does superheroes because he does superheroes. Like, that's his thing. And fair enough. You know, like, you know, the Leopard's got spots. He's got, you know, he's got superheroes. That's what he loves. That's what he does. Fine. But, you know, on any given day, if we're talking about if a comic book is well done and you can see all the talent right there, I can't complain about it. Like, it's so much talent in front of you sort of doing a thing. You know, I'm not going to not read it.
It's interesting because I am curious to see what the next issue brings. Because this is very much a prologue. It's. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is just this woman giving a speech at like Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
And so the story hasn't really even started, which is a problem these days. And when you're talking about five issues,
like, everybody's going to an island, you know, which reminds me of a Mark Russell book of some kind, and somebody's going to make a decision. And, you know,
I'm just saying, I'm curious to see what happens next. What is the actual, you know, when someone like this says, I'm going to give six random people powers in the world, what's the implication of that? I'm curious to see what happens next in there.
But I wish you hadn't told me about the change in the artist. I mean, I'm glad I know, because I won't be disappointed when issue two comes out.
I'll tell you what, it's good to know, but Mark Miller has exemplary taste in artists, so whoever comes on isn't gonna suck. It's not gonna be Frank Quitely, but you're not gonna be like, oh, this is terrible. He's Mark Miller. He's gonna get the best guys. If you look at all those books he did for a while,
yeah.
You know, every one of them. I think after Quitely was off Jupiter's whatever it was, and they brought on Wilfredo Torres. Yeah. Like, it was gorgeous. Not the same, but.
Do you want to know who the artists are?
It said it on the back. I don't remember.
Number two is Carl Kerschel. Number three is Travis Charest. I haven't seen him do interiors in probably 20 years. Number four is Olivier Coipel. Number five is Matteo Buffini. And number six is Matteo Scalera. So it's a good lineup.
That's a murderer's row.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So if anything, this series will be worth reading. I haven't seen Travis Charest interiors maybe more than 20 years. So, you know, I'm in to see. I'm curious to see how they're going to do this. What is it going to be? How they're going to, you know.
The last thing he did was an issue of, what is the book that Richard Starkings did with the elephants?
It was called Elephant Men.
Elephant Men. I think that's the last thing I saw him do. And then another one never came out.
So
I might be wrong, but that's my instinct.
I mean, Miller's an idea factory, right? He even if they're not all over super original, he puts them together in interesting ways. Usually the last book I read of his was that old sort of old man James Bond spy book, which I thought was too short. I think it was only three or four. It was only four issues, and it needed to feel like it needed to be six.
The old man James Bond, where he kills Parliament and all the
And I think that was Matteo Scalera too, wasn't it?
That was fun.
It was. He can't be stopped.
So, you know, always interesting ideas. Always great artists. Doesn't always work, and I'm weary of his turn back to nihilism. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes. He's got a book with Pepe Larraz coming out. Like, he always gets.
I mean, it's also a little interesting that, like, we're talking about this book in very nihilistic terms, where the fundamental premise is a woman who wants to give superpowers to good people.
Yeah, maybe it won't be. I'm just saying in general, his turn in general.
No, I hear you. I'm only putting this together as we talk about it, and that's interesting to me. So,
I mean, I'm sure it's not going to go well. It's not going to go well for that.
Hip flask.
It wasn't called Elephant.
Is that a patron power?
No, it wasn't called Elephant Men. It was called Hip Flask. Elephant Men were a part of it, but then he released other series that had that title. But Hip Flask is the parent series.
Okay. All I remember is the Richard Starkings series, Elephant Men. I don't think I ever read anything in the Hip Flask.
Oh, you know what? I'm actually thinking of Ladrone. Remember Ladrone?
Yeah. No, Travis Charest hasn't had interiors in like a generation.
Yeah. No, well, it's
I'm sure somewhere, maybe some French comics, but he's... He's most been doing living off of
Wait, is he French?
Elephant Man had sort of a French sensibility.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally did.
I think he's
Travis Charest actually French? I would think he's American, but
he's Canadian.
This has been the least effusive
Quebecois, at least.
Yeah, this has been the least effusive pick of the week discussion we've ever had.
I think we
turned you around. Would you like to make another pick?
No, I wouldn't. I felt like I picked the best. We say it's the book I enjoyed the most this week. Yeah. And
nothing wrong with it.
It wasn't a bad week of comics. I think we were all sort of dancing between the raindrops to get our comics read, which I'm not complaining about. I know Josh worries that I'm like pulling the yoke of comics through the fields, but I still enjoyed my comics. And this was the one that when I reflected on it for the amount of time that I had to reflect on it, it was the one I enjoyed the most.
Yeah, nothing wrong.
It is a fine choice.
Dark Knights of Steel number 10 is we're heading towards the final issue, the final story of this fantasy world in which we find out that the white Martians are behind everything. We get sort of the backstory and the story of John Jones's life on Mars in this world. I just wish this was like an ongoing series. I know that the economics of these things probably don't allow for it, but I feel like it's such a waste of all these interesting versions of the characters and this world he's created to just do 12. I feel like this would have been a
really...
It
doesn't mean that we won't see other...
It's just
all day, anytime.
It would have been fun to be like really flesh this world out and tell like a saga here, but you know, I don't know how popular this is or isn't.
I will say this is a better property than the Marvel one he did. Like if
it
had more legs.
Dark Ages or whatever it was called?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's like they came to me and be like, do you want to do an old-timey story with these characters? Like, sure thing, mate. Let's do it.
Wait, are you talking about the one Tom Taylor did that was Dark Ages, or are you talking about like a 1619
whatever, game? like what
the
characters
is the future, yeah, is the post-apocalyptic.
Dark Ages was technically post-apocalyptic.
Right, but it still felt like they were going back to the Stone Age, I guess.
That's because there was no technology, right. But yeah.
It's fine.
You know, the art still tends to be terrific for this. I love the layouts are fun. It's Yasmin Puchery for the most part on this series for the whole way through. There's a lot of interesting dynamics here between the power. You know, we end up with four queens running things because all the kings have been assassinated. That was fun. I just really like this world, these characters in it, and it's a bummer it's going to be ending soon because we only have two more issues left.
How do you feel about the white Martian turn? I mean, this is more or less the same bit that you know, it's the John Jones's origin story, the same twist that you had in Grant Morrison's thing. I think I felt a little like, oh, I was kind of hoping it would be something different because so much of these other things are turns of what you didn't expect, that Alfred is a Martian, that, you know, is all a little mixed up. And then this felt a little, you know, straight down the line.
That was
25
years ago when that happened.
I know. I just mean like it's a story that
Ryan wasn't even born yet.
Most of the stuff here isn't parallel to DC. That's one of the things I really liked about it. But then this part was, and I was kind of like, oh, that's not.
I mean, did John replace an Alfred who died, or is the entire concept of Alfred a John Jones?
I think it's the second one. I feel it's the second one.
I believe
the
latter.
I mean, I think you're right, but it does open up that possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, it's not the same. So who is Alfred? Just some guy who takes care of Bruce, you know?
I can't believe you just said that.
I know.
In this story, he's not. It's not like he's been serving. He's just like the guy who takes care of Bruce.
He has a bit.
I couldn't love him more if he were my own son.
Exactly.
Yes, because he takes care of him. I'm just saying he's not like this. This isn't the DC universe where the family's been serving the Waynes for generations. This is just he's the guy, the kingdom, who takes care of the kid. And he loves him.
Yeah.
You know?
You know,
I don't know if I fully agree with that interpretation.
And Bruce was, it doesn't matter. We don't need to argue. We both made our points. It's not going to change anything. And, you know, Bruce was raised by the elves. There was just all these slight differences from what we are normally used to seeing. It's one of the things I really liked about this series. It's not a complaint really about the White Martians, but that stuff was pretty much parallel to the DC version of events. And so I found it a little less interesting.
I did find it interesting how they basically use their shapeshifting powers to sow discord amongst all the kingdoms and put them all at war. Like the way they use their powers politically was interesting.
It was like this. It was Skrulls.
It's not clear if the Martian civilization was also in their quote unquote Middle Ages or Dark Ages. So it's like how, I mean, I know John Jones is a very powerful being and could probably fly from Mars to Earth on under his own power, but like it wasn't clear how did he actually get from planets. Do they have the technology to do that, or is he just able to fly? Yeah, you're right.
He was like, so I came to Earth, and I was like, well, all right, you know what? I don't need an explanation. I mean, that really is that's a Batmobile catching a flat tire thing. Like, don't worry.
Hand wave.
Yep.
He flew. It
would have wasted our time. And if I'm the writer, you know, that's not
important.
It is totally unimportant to the narrative. Unless it turns out to be later, and then they'll get to it.
I mean, there are Green Lantern rings involved, so we do know that those enable that sort of transport.
Yeah, like, see, that's another thing. Like, the dude at the end who had a Green Lantern thing, and then they call him Lex. I was like, oh, Joker. That's Luther. Luther. Is this Joker?
Joker, Luther. Didn't wasn't it combined?
With a Green Lantern ring? That's what I'm talking about. There's no parallel to that. That's just mashing things up, and I think that that's really fun.
So you, what you're saying is you hated it.
I liked it. I understood you in the series.
The vernacular of the internet, it means you hated it.
This, yeah, exactly. This series is, it's every time there's a new issue of it, I have a little like delighted surprise. I'm like, oh, right, this. I kind of don't think about it until it comes out. And I know it's monthly, so I'm not getting hit over the head with it. And, you know, it's enjoyable and it's kind of cool to see the construction of it. I
know that the double shipping has broken all of our brains, but I feel like there was a slight delay, but maybe that's just because it came out 4 weeks ago. But I feel like it was.
I was going to ask at the beginning of this discussion, is this a monthly book? Because I feel like I have a hard time remembering issue on a month.
It's definitely monthly, but I don't know if there was like a longer delay because I couldn't remember the last time an issue had come out. I guess I could look it up, but what's the fun in that?
No fun whatsoever.
No.
I don't know about Action Comics. I don't know.
I'm enjoying it.
I'm bummed. I don't really enjoy it. I enjoy Superman. I don't know. I don't know. There's things about it I like. There's things about it I like for sure. But
I had a couple issues to catch up on this week on Action Comics, and I've listened to the show enough to hear your criticisms about like the large family. There's too many people with S's on their chests. And I know I said chess is not chess. That was intentional. But
don't explain the joke.
Well, here we are.
Hold on. I'm sorry. Dark Knights of Steel number 9 came out in January, so there was a delay.
Okay.
So it was a month and a half delay. Came out the first week of January.
I feel like I'm enjoying the ensemble cast of this book, and I'm enjoying the Dan Jurgens, Lee Weeks backup, and I have zero opinions whatsoever on the other backup, but I'm actually kind of digging this series, I think, more than Connor is at this point.
Yeah, that's probably not too hard. I think
no, I don't hate it. I there's things about it I don't like.
I like more about it than I don't. I'm really interested. I kind of forget about the family because the only part I'm really keying into is this Metallo storyline and Lex Luthor, and like the other people are there, and in this one it kind of worked to have John Henry in jeopardy from it. I thought that worked really well, and everybody else shows up, and I just thought, oh, that's what would have happened when we get back to the apartment and we see everybody there and the super twins or whatever. But the actual like it's actually pretty, you know, take all that out, it's a pretty good Metallo story.
Yeah, and I like the sort of body horror of Metallo in this particular story, and I know that's been done before, but you know, the great way he's modifying other humans, it looks really good. I think the way it's being written, they're really finding interesting ways to, like, you know, the fact that Metallo last issue said, well, if Superman has a family, I need one too. And so he starts creating new Metallo people. And that's creepy and it's wrong and it's messed up.
But there's the other thing going on where he starts talking to his sister and like he's losing it. And I think that for whatever reason, if you remember how the story started out, is I don't remember Metallo's name. John Corbin, that's right. He was in Northern Exposure, right? No, that was John.
Yeah.
Anyway, exactly.
He married Bo Derek.
You know, he looked human. Like everything was going okay for him, and then he ran into Lex, and every issue it's going worse and worse and worse. And in this one, like he's clearly, I can't tell if he's hallucinating or somebody's controlling that's Lex controlling the hologram of his sister, whatever. But there is a page turn here, and it is, when you talk about body horror, page 16. And they say, this is where your sister is. And she's like in some torture chamber. She's being held upside down. Yeah. There's a million needles going through. That is one hell of a page right there. That is an excellent image and page turn.
I'm on the fence about Rafa Sandoval because I think he's very good. I don't like his Superman model. I don't like the face. But there's really good stuff in here. So,
right.
It's almost got like a Mark Buckingham vibe to it, which is not an artist I ever would have thought to pair with Superman. But like the way he does his faces, I see a lot of Bucky in there. And one thing I do like about having
the
ensemble cast is, you know, Metallo, especially if you have multiple Metallos running around, like a truly formidable foe against Kryptonians because he's powered by Kryptonite. So he's able to just blast Kryptonians with Kryptonite. So it makes it a little more interesting that now you've got all these people who are part of Superman's family in legitimate peril. But because there's so many of them, Clark can be like, okay, you know, Connor, you fly Kara to the hospital. Kong, you fly this guy to Star Labs. And then when he gets home to the apartment, he's able to say like, hey, John, you stay home with the twins so I can go do Superman stuff. So like he's able to divide and conquer a little bit, because I feel like otherwise we would have a story where Superman's trying to do it all. And the story would be more about how stretched thin he is. But he's not stretched thin in this because he's got all this support. And the story's not, it's about them a little bit, but not so much that I'm annoyed by it. And I don't know that aspect of it for me. Maybe I think I just need some help, guys.
One thing I thought was actually a really nice moment in this one. And I don't know if you want to have the Superman as dad thing, but it's, if you're telling a story about him having a son, I think it's really valid, is that like Superboy or whatever, John, is actually like, hey dad, you want to go have a catch? And he's like, sure, we can bring the new kids. Oh, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's so terrible.
But I actually was like, oh, fuck. Because I was like, now we're going to do super kid jealousy. And I was like, but then they nipped it in the bud really quickly. So that I like that quite a bit.
I mean, if you're going to do that story, like you think about it, like any kid wants his dad, you know, and the story thus far has been that, of course, in addition to being Superman, who is amazing, Superman has also been a really great dad. And here you see like a little crack in that. And I thought that was good. Like if you're gonna do the story with a son, you know, Superman would probably be a somewhat absent father. Like it's no way he wouldn't. He cares too much about everybody.
Yeah, and his job too. I didn't even know that was Jonathan at first, because in some books he has super Gen Z hair and super Gen Z clothes, and then this one he's wearing like a terrible sweater and looks like Dick Grayson.
That is a knock on Rafa Sandoval. It's very difficult to tell the different folks apart, and it's funny because in the first story he looks one way, and then in the last story, which I do not want to read, but I do like the art, just from an aesthetic standpoint, he looks like a completely different person. He's got that weird dangly curly wet hair.
Yeah, which story? His own book?
The Lee Weeks
one? No, the third story.
Oh, the third story. Oh,
You've been reading that? You've been keeping up with the Power Girl?
No. It's just that I finished the Lee Weeks story and I was on a high and I was like, oh, this looks good. And John's in it. So I didn't realize that it was the superhero psychology session story. And I was like, oh, wait, I'm out.
He just looks totally different in every. Yeah. Like, make up your mind what kind of hair he has. But,
Done.
I don't know. There's a lot going on. The best part is the Metallo Lex Luthor Superman thing. I like the scene with Lex and Superman in the prison where Superman is convinced Lex is running Metallo like a agent, and Lex seems to be not and is slightly concerned but won't show it. But we can see it. Like that was all very good. And again, Philip Kennedy Johnson writes terrific Superman stuff. It's just I think there's just so much bursting at the seams in a 20-page book. There's so many characters have to be serviced.
Absolutely.
Well, so here's my question, Connor. When you're in charge at DC, do you go back to 22? Do you give them those two extra pages?
Well, I mean, editor in chief. That's not an editor in chief decision. That's a business.
It's also decision. It's not a content decision.
Yeah,
it's an economic decision. Connor, but what do you
heads
think?
Will roll though when I'm in charge.
Sure. Oh yeah. I just like
the, so many heads. Like, one of the streets. Oh,
the Axeman cometh. Yeah. There's a bit here though. So we just talked about when he shows up at Luthor's, and we are going to move on, but this is a good old comic book question. He goes through the wall.
Right.
So is he doing the Flash thing there? Does he have the ability to phase? I was not aware
that
he could.
He shouldn't have that, because not even all the Flashes can do that.
I agree with Connor.
And does the wall still blow up when they do it, or is that a thing of the past?
Depends on the Flash.
Yeah, Barry was able to get through walls without blowing them up. Wally always struggled with that because you destabilize the molecules when you phase through it, and that was something Wally always had a hard time with. And
yeah, how did he do that?
Well, I immediately saw it. I was like, whoa.
I caught it too, but you know, this isn't. That's Batman filling the tires.
There,
you can't give him all the powers like that. He shouldn't be able to do that.
Well, just it. Yeah, no, exactly. I was like, no. Superman's power set is very defined, and every time it's fun when they modify Flash's powers. It's fun when the artist thinks of some other weird faux science shit that he can do because he's really fast. It doesn't work that way for Superman. Every time they're like, no, Superman can explode with the sun. It's terrible. But like the Flash, you can be like, yeah, he figured out how to do it so fast that he can turn himself blue. Awesome. Go with it.
It's also, but Lex is in a cell with like an actual like bar cage wall.
They've got like every other superhero, supervillain story. You know, they get put in a prison that is like, you know, is impregnable. He's in some 1940s shit.
So like what? I guess my question is: is it possible that Superman's vibrating is him? Like, can he bend the bars and put them back in place? I mean, the vroom vibrating sound effect doesn't quite jive with that. But I'm just thinking out loud of how to make it make sense.
Yeah,
maybe not. I noticed it too.
I feel like I always really want to like the Doom Patrol, and I always have a hard time with it. So this is the newest Dawn of DC book. Unstoppable Doom Patrol by Dennis Culver, Chris Burnham, Brian Reber, Pat Brousseau. And first of all, much like Quietly, Chris Burnham draws like no one else draws in comics. He has such a unique style all his own.
Yeah.
There's a couple of shots here. Like there's one where, I can't find it, but it was where like reverse, like with the, you can saw the back of some guy's teeth. Like he just does such weird, interesting stuff. And I'm just, oh, here it is. It's a page 8 on your digital reader. I just love looking at his stuff.
Yeah.
I love looking at stuff. I don't know why. I like the Doom Patrol when they show up in stories. I don't know if I like them as protagonists. I didn't get into the TV show at all. Like I don't know. What did you guys think of this book?
I've never read it. I mean, that's not true. I've never liked it when I've read it. I did not read this issue because like you said, you want to like it, never have.
Didn't you read the Grant Morrison books?
Not much of it. I think maybe I read that first trade, but it was a struggle even then.
Interesting. Ryan, did you read this?
I did. Yes.
What did you think of it? I didn't dislike this. I thought this was fun. I just have a hard time getting with them. That's all.
I didn't dislike this either. I thought the commentary they were making on like Batman's relationship with the metahuman community and how on the Justice League, really, it's only Flash that has the metagene, which I also feel like isn't Flash connected to the Speed Force. I don't think Flash needs a metagene.
That actually blew my mind. They were like, there's one superhero on the Justice League. And I was like, wait, what? And there was like, you're all aliens or people with, you know, technology or
right. Hal has a ring, Kyle or whoever your GL on the league is, and yeah, Aquaman's a hybrid, and Wonder Woman's
just the god. Like,
are we saying that Wonder Woman is not human? That's like, is that a correct statement?
She's made of clay. Didn't you just
she's
reread
she's what
Kingdom
made of clay,
Come?
Josh?
Yeah, that's true. Fair enough.
There's no metahumans in they were like only Flash is a metahuman, and I was like, oh,
because I feel like the DC concept of the metahuman predates the establishment of the core Justice League team. Postdates it. So you would have to retcon the core 7 team. You'd have to make some of the core team metahumans.
Listen, here's the deal. We all know this is true. Metahuman is analogous to midichlorian.
No, it's analogous to mutants.
I don't need it. It doesn't, like, I don't need them to have a gene that gives them superpowers. I think it takes away from the fun of superheroes and the chemicals splashing on Barry Allen with the lightning bolt. Like, well, I don't need it to have activated a gene within him. I don't need, you know, that stuff.
That's what's really fun about Marvel is that they created a subset of that. So if you do like that, that's what mutants are. That's a different, and I like that. I think it works, but I think you make a very good point. Over in DC, you don't have to do that. So to me, the phrase metahuman is just human with extra powers, and that's enough. But you're absolutely
the whole
right.
Doom Patrol thing
not
is they are like mutants, kind of. You know, they're all weird. And
I mean, the original Doom Patrol book is a team of freaks and weirdos led by a guy in a wheelchair that predates the publication of X-Men 1. So, like, make of that what you will.
But they weren't talking about metahuman genes back then.
No, I mean, Francis and Crick had barely published their paper like 10 years prior in 1953 about the double helix structure of the human genome.
Yeah.
Interesting to point out in this book, when Batman shows up, it's with Tim, not with Damian.
How'd that make you feel?
It's going to make me feel great.
I wanted to ask, I mean, my main question for you reading this book was, like, how did you feel about this Batman representation?
I thought it was fine. It's very much in line of kind of like a Garth Ennis book, which is the sort of the vibe of this anyway. I have no problem with, you know, the weird side characters taking the piss out of the main heroes, because that's kind of, you know, kind of what they do. So that's fine.
It's been a while since we've seen Monsieur Mala and the Brain, and I remember them. I think Judd Winnick did something with them in some book that was drawn by Tom Rainey, and I can't remember what it was now. To save my life.
Look at you.
Well, I don't remember the book, so who? I mean, what good is this to anyone? Write in, contact iFanboy.com.
Well, the Brain is toast. So
the Brain is toast, but that made me a little sad because I feel like Judd Winnick established that, like, they are not just partners in crime, but they're actually a couple. Like, they're in a romantic relationship, and so
They had a falling out.
Sure, they sure did.
And then the brains fell out. I don't know. I mean, look, I didn't dislike this. I enjoyed reading it. Dennis Culver can write solid stuff. Chris Burnham is terrific. I guess that Die, Die, Die book is over.
The Outsiders. It was their Outsiders series.
But I just have trouble connecting to the Doom Patrol. It doesn't mean I'm not going to read it. I'm going to check out at least another issue of it to see really what we're doing here.
I like that one dude's name is Cliff. He's got a regular guy name.
I mean, he's Robot Man, but nobody calls him that.
That's Oscar winner Brendan Fraser you're talking about, sir.
Does he play Cliff in one of the things?
In the TV show.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
He's the voice of Cliff.
Oh, I believe his quote just went up for TV.
If you listen to his, apparently his catchphrase on the show is "What the fuck?" And he was recently on WTF with Mark Maron. So that was, hey, what fun.
That, you know what? What the fuck is not a good catchphrase.
No, it's not.
I didn't write it.
This included the Doom Patrol plus Peacemaker, so it was very much a DC TV show book.
I see.
But I'm happy for the Chris Burnham work alone, it was worth looking at.
I like that Doom Patrol is a thing that some people like a lot, and it doesn't have to be for me. I like that they do, and I hope they're having their day with the TV show and that comic done by great creators, and, you know, it's fine. I like that when they
do these soft reboot or resettings of things that they include books like this. Because we were just talking about this. Actually, this will be the second time we mentioned this. But on the Patreon Hangout, Josh, before you joined, when it was just Ryan and I, we were talking about the lack of DC midlist and how one of the reasons I think – because we talked on the previous show about how I'm reading like five fewer books a week than I used to. I think one of the reasons is because there isn't very much from the DC midlist. There's no Green Arrow book. There's no Green Lantern book. There's no – John Jones or Hawkman book. There's no Doom Patrol.
There's seven Batman books.
Right. And so
four Batman books and three other things.
I'm happy that they're adding back books like this because of the comics world, DC in particular, is more rich and interesting when they're not just Superman and Batman comics.
God, it hadn't really occurred to me. Is there a Green Lantern book right now?
No.
There's no DC midlist. A lot of them are coming back with this Dawn of DC, but for the last year or so, there's been hardly anything other than Flash, Wonder Woman, then a bunch of Batman and Superman books.
Grant Morrison, was that the last Green Lantern book?
I don't think that was in continuity, though. There was Green Lanterns by, was that Humphrey? Sam Humphrey's writing that?
No. The last Green Lantern book was... The last Green Lantern book was about Jon Stewart. We read a couple issues of it, and it wasn't very good, and we stopped reading it. That was post-Grant Morrison, way post-Green Lanterns. Green Lanterns was like 10 years ago.
I know the one you're talking about, Josh. You're talking about the out of continuity with
I'm talking about the one you mentioned, Ryan, the Green Lanterns book with Simon and Jessica, and that was like 10
Jessica.
Years ago.
No, it was not 10 years ago, but
yes, yeah, it was. I think the other side of that Jon Stewart book, I think it happened in the same book. I think there was two storylines, and one was the lady with the glasses and then the little girl with the fists.
Right.
So those were in the same book. That's why I said the lady.
Oh, wait, you mean the young Brazilian girl who was like the...
I liked her. Yeah. Whatever. And then the whole of like they blew up Oa or something like that.
Yeah, that was... We stopped reading it. It was not good. And I guess everybody else did too because it got canceled.
I think I read it for a while.
No. We both stopped pretty quickly.
Fair enough.
Anyway, that's why I'm happy books like this exist. That's a long way of saying that. Yeah.
So I was pretty excited to see Dungeons & Dragons Saturday Morning Adventures number one from the good folks at IDW. Listeners of the show may remember that there was a Saturday Morning Adventures version of G.I. Joe that they did, which my life partner here, Connor, and I loved.
Almost sick of the week, much. Several times.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but either way, it was every time an issue came out, it was a joy. It was too short. And it's really interesting to me that the next thing they chose to do, and I didn't know they were going to do more of these, was the Dungeons and Dragons cartoon, because it was fairly short-lived, and I remember loving it. However, I didn't remember a single goddamn thing about it.
I'm sure it has to do with licensing, like what they had licensed to do, but also...
Yeah. Well, this is the movie, it's the timing.
Yeah. Strangely enough, again, on the last patron hangout, we ended up talking about 80s cartoons for the most part. Mm-hmm. And this one came up pretty heavily, and then suddenly, a week later, the book comes out, or 2 weeks later, the book comes out. It was very strange timing. Yeah.
It was great, and you know, as I went through it, like, it's actually really well constructed, I gotta say. In the beginning, there was a really good sort of roll call, and that's all coming back to me a little bit, like stuff I haven't thought about in nearly 40 years, probably. And we meet, and then the dungeon master shows up, and I was like, right, it was that little Gwildor looking thing, this dungeon, there's a Yoda or whatever, and it was the first time I'd heard the term dungeon master. And then they showed the bad guys, and there was the little 9-year-old who's a barbarian, that's his power. Each of these kids got a different power. I mean like sort of technically introducing you to a bunch of concepts. It was really well done. This kid's this age, here's the deal. There was a little joke about it. The style, unlike the G.I. Joe book, was more stylized. It was the artist who did this, which is George Kambadis. And it was more like that. It was his style, not the sort of animated style, which was, you know, it would have been cool if it was the anime style, but it worked. It's actually pretty good art for that. You know, and like every time you turn the page and you'd see, oh, there's the villain, Venger. And Venger had like one big wing and he's missing a horn off his face. It's like, it was something about 80s villains had like a vaguely, they all kind of looked like they were drawn by Jack Kirby and Alex Toth had been melded together.
They might have been. That's what they did.
And there's a great double page sequence of the characters running through different panels into different places, you know, as they go through, I think they're going through dimensions or something like that. Yeah, they're hopping dimensions. And it was great. It was really fun. I had a history with it. I wouldn't say if you never knew what this was, that you'd be like, this is great. But as a sort of like throwbacky thing, it was really fun. David Booker and Sam Maggs on this.
I never knew what this was. And I read it when I saw you put it on the breakdown. Nobody rolled any dice at like any point.
Nope.
The show wasn't that. A bunch of kids get transported to the... It's I Hate Fairyland, but... You know, like, and they all
or
get
dice, right?
Was
that that no die that Kieran die, that yeah. Kieran Gillen book?
That's
yeah.
Exactly what it was.
But like, how do you know if like you hit the orc with the arrow?
Because you got to do it.
Because you just do roll. The thing is this: that's a metaphor. The rolling, we're doing that all the time, and so they're just doing it. And chance itself is the dice.
But I mean, ooh, like the Dungeon Master is supposed to be like a buddy of yours that you convinced to do it, not some like little short dude.
I feel like you're having trouble with the concept.
I am a little bit. I never watched the show, so I'm struggling. I'm doing my best.
Who put a Greg Land book in here?
Put book on script. I only put this on there to say one thing about it, and it's that...
Which is what? What's the book?
Oh, the book. Thank you, Connor. The book is Avengers Beyond, Stork by Derek Landry, art by Greg Land. This is like, I didn't read whatever Avengers book led into this event. I just saw that it was an Avengers number one, so I snagged it. And the only thing I really want to say about this book is there's kind of an interesting conceit where it's the Beyonder, so he's essentially a godlike being that exists outside time and space relative to the universe that the Avengers themselves exist in. And so it's his caption boxes throughout the first part of the issue. And the Avengers have been having these instances where they lose their memory of how they ended up in specific places or events. So they have a suspicion that something is influencing them from outside the universe. And so what we find out, and what I thought was the one really cool concept that I hadn't really seen executed in this exact way before, is Tony Stark and Black Panther, without talking about it out loud to each other, both managed to sort of infer that something is influencing the Avengers team from outside reality. And so they each start building one half of a machine to capture whatever that being is. And then they teleport each half of their machines into the same room in the hopes that they just magically map up. Because if they talk about it out loud, the being that's observing them will see it and will interfere and prevent them and erase their memories and prevent them from building the machine. So as long as they don't say anything to each other, this being, which we learn is the Beyonder, can't mess them up. And so they essentially science their way by working in parallel with each other, and it works, and they're able to capture the Beyonder. And once he's pulled into the 616 reality, all of his caption boxes become his word balloons. And I was like, that's actually kind of a cool sci-fi concept, and comic book, and using the comic book form to sort of make it feel real in the moment to these characters. Yeah.
Difference between interdimensional states of being.
Yeah. So that's I dug that. I thought that was cool. I don't think I'll stick with the series beyond that. The story itself was not, I didn't know how these events were set in motion. I didn't recognize the characters that were introduced. And I don't like hate Greg Land's art, but like in particular little things like the way he draws Blade's sunglasses just looked awful. Did not look good.
He was awesome on Darth Vader. It's perfect for it. I don't know why. I think he did an Alien book too that was pretty good. But people.
He's a pariah. He chases other artists' work. Star Wars Corner time. And I'm just going to correct the title of the book because it's not totally right. Star Wars Corner. Star Wars Return of the Jedi. Jabba's Palace number one. Which is a book about Jabba the Hutt.
This is a Tales from Jabba's Palace story.
Yes.
And I was like, I am going to check it out. And Connor... Here is the thing. I know you like Tales from Jabba's Palace, so you can't.
Is Muff Tak in it?
No.
Is Lack Sivrak in it?
So no? Okay. Do you know when C-3PO and RTD2 are introduced to EV-99 in Jabba's Palace? You are a protocol droid, are you not?
Yeah.
And such. And then in the and they said, let's hope you do better than Jabba's last interpreter droid. And then you see in the corner, the droid is being pulled apart and he's going, no, no, no.
Yep.
It's that droid story.
I think that's all that needs to be said about the issue. Yeah.
Yeah. No,
is it actually, multiple stories? Just the one story.
Just that story. And it was just that story. And to be honest, I loved it right up until then, and after that, it wasn't really all that remarkable. I didn't really like the story. I didn't really like the characterization of the droid.
But no Muff Tak and Cabe, no Lack Sivrak, no nobody.
Which one's Muff Tak? Is it the little one or is that Cabe?
Muff Tak's the big one.
Okay, so
the big silvery furry.
Now was Cabe getting his own drink or was he getting it from Muff Tak?
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, they're buddies.
It was a big drink for a little guy.
Well, that's the benefit of being a little guy.
I thought it was fine. It was a little like the behavior of the droid didn't really seem to match what I think of as a droid or even what we saw in the movie. It didn't seem to, but I don't know how you could have done a story like that.
What lengths will you go to get your restraining bolt removed?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, respect. I did not enjoy it. It wasn't great, but, you know, I don't regret reading it. I would do it again. if they do another one of these, if they pick some random character out and it's just a short one issue story.
So this was a one shot?
Yeah, I'm on it. Yep.
It fleshed out that part of the world, that part of the universe in a way that
has
like
no effect on anything.
Exactly. It didn't annoy me. It didn't. Well, no. We don't have time to talk about the things that annoy me in Star Wars these days. So I'm just going to say I wasn't annoyed by this. It was good.
All right. Those are the books we're going to talk about this week. But at patreon.com/fanboy, there are books we add to the rundown called The Patron Pick. The patrons vote to add it. And that is how we get here with this week's winner. Clobberin Time, number one from Marvel Comics. Steve Scroach, Brian Valenza, Joe Sabino. This is a miniseries featuring the adventures of the Thing and the Hulk in Clobberin Adventures. And this definitely would have been my pick of the week had it been my week of comics to choose.
Me too.
This would have been my pick of the week.
I'll admit something at the start of this, just so it's out of the way. I enjoyed this as well. I have issues. I have visual issues anytime like the thing's rocks are damaged or not in place.
I don't like that. And I looked at the cover for the next issue and it's even worse.
Oh man.
And it grosses me out in a really visceral way.
I have a really hard time with it.
I'm just gonna be honest.
Totally with you. And I didn't need the body horror thing stuff at the very, very end. Trust me. However, it didn't take away from a really fun, terrific. It seems like each issue is going to be its own little singular adventure of this character who wears Iron Man, Doom, and looks like maybe Deathlok armor all mashed into one, sending them into different dimensions or times or places to.
As I flip back to the beginning, I was like, all right, I forgot about that weird dude.
Yeah, that was the impetus. And I love the classic classic Hulk in the ripped up purple pants, and he looks like sort of a version of John Buscema's Hulk, which is to me the Hulk that exists in my head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
not too dumb, not too smart. It's not at all related to what's going on in Hulk now. It's sort of totally in its own bubble. And I love when Thing and Hulk team up. I didn't realize Hulk was so much bigger than the Thing. I guess that's just the way Steve Scrooge.
I think it makes sense though. I think that works. I really liked that Hulk kept making up nicknames for Thing. Crackface. Roadface. And the first time he said it, I was like, what is he saying? Oh, crackface. That's funny. Or crackhead, I think.
The thing that I didn't love about this is I actually liked how competent Ben Grimm is in the situation where he's like, he's got tech from Reed. He's trying to like solve the problem. He's trying to be strategic. He's trying to, and you know, and classic Hulk just says, okay, I'm tired of planning. I'm just going to jump in and beat everyone up and
start
win.
Start smashing.
Which, I agree with the logic of the way Hulk works would work, but I felt like Ben just kept getting constantly undercut and didn't get a moment to like also be the competent hero that he could be.
But that's Ben's thing, isn't it?
I disagree. And here's why. In this case, he decides that he needs to be a stand-in for Reed. And so therefore he's trying to do the thing and he's getting undermined by a character who just works with his base impulse and goes for it. And in the end, the only way that they're really successful is they just have to throw themselves at the thousands and thousands of demons streaming at them. And that was the thing that was ultimately successful. So the Hulk's instinct was correct. And until he submitted to his monster nature, then they were going to be in trouble. But mostly, I just like that they had to fight a fuck ton of demon things. And like at the end, there's like, it was so silly. The whole thing was silly. It was great. There's just a valley filled with corpses. And it was funny in the middle of it. It was like, they're killing those things. That doesn't happen a lot.
That's a great panel. I mean, this is full of tremendous art from Steve Scrooge, who's, you know, sort of a, he's not a huge, it's hard to say what he is. He's not a cult figure, but he's not a huge superstar.
He shows up every five years or so.
Yeah. He's almost like a cult superstar. And there's just wonderful pages. Page 18, where they're sitting on the pile of corpses, or my favorite, page 16, where they're jumping at us. Terrific. I love his thing. I love his Hulk. Mm-hmm. I liked his Reed. I thought the Reed bit was funny where they were sitting around a table, the three of them, and Reed's. But Reed was, his head was stretched far off into the distance, so he didn't even know there was trouble, didn't even know they got kidnapped, wasn't aware of anything because his head is off doing something else. Like, I thought this was all fun. I just enjoyed the sort of old classic Marvelness of it.
It's called Clobberin' Time.
So they got
the Hulk showed up, they delivered on the title. And no
Look
more.
Look at those donuts on page 21. How much do you want those donuts?
I believe those are bagels. I actually had thought about this. I think that,
Bialys?
You may remember that
they went to the Jewish deli.
Ben offered him Ruggola.
Yeah, you're right.
They have matzo ball soup, so those are going to have to be bagels.
Yeah, they're colored too dark, but yes, they're bagels.
They're too small to be bagels, quite honestly. Well, although,
think of the scale of the people.
Exactly. I got there.
And I love that was a great comedic button where Reed finally retracts his neck and he comes back and the Thing and the Hulk are all fucked up from their fighting.
He's been up there so long he didn't need a haircut and a shave.
So, no, Ryan, you're 100% right. And I turned the page to the cover for the next issue and I was like, oh God, I'm going to vomit. But, you know, next issue is Wolverine.
It's something I personally struggle with. I don't I don't wish anyone else to struggle with it as well, but the body horror of Thing, anytime his rocks are not like firmly in place.
When his rock just falls off and it's like gooey underneath and it's sticking to, like, it's no good. No good.
Don't put words to it.
My family used to really tease me about how I've gotten better, but like I still get a little squeamish about certain things. And you know, my dad's a surgeon, and the sometimes the dinner table talk strayed far afield of what would be considered appropriate or normal for other families. And so I just, every once in a while, something hits me and I'm just like, I can't hang. I still read the issue, and I'll read the next one.
Forgive me for the diversion, and like, keep it short. But like, if you're a surgeon, do you just not get creeped out by body stuff? Or is there like...
I actually have a good and short answer to that. And it's, I've joined my dad in surgery a couple of times.
You scrubbed in?
I didn't scrub in, actually. That was not permitted, but I was in the operating theater.
Gallery?
No, okay. I mean, I was standing next to him. I was like over his shoulder, but like, I didn't scrub in because I wasn't going to touch anything. But basically...
Did you have junior mints?
But... I was eating a sandwich, as every coroner does in every procedural show. But no, it was like, you know, someone had broken their wrist, right? They'd slipped on ice and fallen and broken their wrist. And the way it works is the entire person's body, except for their arm, which is tourniqueted, so it already looks like sort of a dead body part because there's no, like, blood flow, right? Right. And there's literally a clock, there's a countdown clock of, like, here's how long the tourniquet can safely stay on. So here's how long you have to do the surgery. Here's the arm. There's everything else is blanketed and covered, and then the anesthesiologist is at the person's head making sure that they are doing okay. So all the surgeon's got to do is get in, get out, fix the problem before the countdown. So it really is like kind of more of a video game than like dealing with an actual human person.
So it's sort of disconnected from the body, so you don't think of it that way. So then
I was fine and the thing I realized is whenever I had to do dissections in my biology classes in college or even high school, the thing that bothers me more is the smell of formaldehyde. And there's no formaldehyde when the person's alive. So the person's alive. And the thing that bothered me is at the very end of the surgery, just to make sure he'd done everything correctly, he said, okay, go ahead and take the tourniquet off. And then you see the arm come back to life because you see all the blood start flowing back in it.
Ooh, my last thing. So does your dad get squidged out by anything?
Yeah, that was the question, the original question.
Yeah.
You'd have to ask him. I don't know that I can answer that for him.
Okay. See, that's what I want to know. Like, I want to know if you're a person who cuts bodies open, but like, do you hate the sound of ketchup bottles getting squished? Like, that's what I want to know.
That sounds like a you thing.
No, I don't mind that. I was just thinking of a thing that makes a sound. I hate the sound of people chewing. I hate it. Or like that. Ugh.
I don't know of anything that like grosses him out, just on an irrational level.
Spiders, snakes. You don't have to really answer this. These are conceptual questions, really.
Yeah, I don't have a great answer. Sorry.
That's fine.
Clobber and Time number one. Ratings and Clobber and Time number one. Out of five.
Two
stars.
Broken wrists.
You're giving it a 2 out of 5. Wow.
No, I said two broken wrists. I was making a joke about the surgery. Go ahead, Josh.
I'm going to say 4.25, which I feel is lowish, but I don't know if I want to go 4.5. I enjoyed the hell out of it.
I'm going 5, Ryan.
Wow, full 5.
Well, it would have been his pick, and yeah.
We know that
if Connor gives something the pick, it's automatically a 5.
Right.
Not lately.
It's like a, what do you call it in grading? You know, curved.
The curve.
Curve grading.
Curve.
Yeah.
Grades on a curve. I'll go. It's just a solid straight down the middle 4.
All right. I feel like I need to move up to 4.5 then.
You do what you gotta do.
About a curve. I'm doing it. I'm saying that.
Patreon. Oh, and now we're all sticking with it, Ryan?
Sure. If I can get through the next
gnarly.
Issue.
I mean, it looks like it's a team-up miniseries where every issue is a different character with the things, and this was the Hulk. Next month is, or next whatever issue is the Wolverine, I was going to say, but that's from that cartoon, that X-Men cartoon. Well, Pride of the X-Men. Anyway, patreon.com/ifanboys, where you can vote. If you're every patron can vote to be put a book in the rundown, but that's also where you can support the show. patreon.com/ifanboys is where all the patrons go, and help keep the lights on, keep the bills paid. We appreciate that. ifanboy.threadless.com is where you can buy our t-shirts. ifanboy.com/support is where you can give a PayPal tip. ifanboy.com/Amazon is where you can shop, and you can find our Booksplode books. And bookshop.org is our partner for supporting local bookstores, and you can find those links with the Booksplode books. And we thank everyone who does that support the show. We are running long, so I'm flying through this part to get to the patron power, which is where we thank the $5 and higher patrons with the superpower that's live on the show. And Ryan had one ready to go because it was distracting him earlier. So I'm very excited to see what it is. Ryan, take it away.
James White knows where all the fossils are. This is one very close to my heart, obviously. But James has a spider sense, but it's for fossils. Anytime he can sense spatially, like, and I'm talking like literally, like if he drove past the La Brea, if he lives in LA with Connor, you know, he's Connor's roommate. If he drives past the La Brea tar pits, he feels the presence of thousands of fossils just over his shoulder.
Can he identify them singularly, or is just he knows there's a fossil, but he doesn't know what it is?
That's a good question. Does he have an incredible knowledge of the anatomy of distinct extinct fossilized animals?
I think he could tell you that, like, oh, this is like a femur of a mammal, but I think until he puts eyes on it, he probably can't give you, like, you know, he probably can't identify it down to the species level. But he knows where every, like, if you took him out on a dig out west, he could find every T-Rex skull hiding under every Montana ranch that's out there.
Is his knowledge of the anatomies of these, is it from the power, or did he earn it through study?
I think it's more the latter. I think if you had this power, it would, I think I, for me, maybe because of who I am, it would drive you crazy to not be able to identify things on a basic level. So I think he's done a little bit of work to be able to say, like, oh, I know the difference between a radius and an ulna, fibula and a tibula. Like, you know, he knows that, but
right.
But really, it's just sort of, you know, there are Spider-Man stories where, like, they dig into the spider sense and how, like, cacophonous it would be to actually have that power because of the danger that surrounds us all the time. Like, I think people don't realize how prevalent fossils are everywhere.
He only feels it when it's, like, direct about to hurt him danger, not just general danger.
There've been stories where, like, it's, you know, he does have, like, a buzzing all the, whatever. I'm not going to get into that right now, but like,
shouldn't.
There's buildings in DC that have marble from quarries that you can see fossils in the walls. So, like, he could be walking through, you know, a building and be feeling it because, like, there's a snail fossil embedded in the marble.
How fine-tuned and sensitive is it? Meaning that I'm sure that fossils exist that are nearly microscopic. So is he sensing that everywhere, like sand, or is it sort of equivalent to human vision, let's say?
Not microscopic, but down to the level of, I would say there are fossils that are the size of a grain of sand, and that's about his lower limit. I spent a lot of time in undergrad sorting through foraminifera, which are a type of, they're basically single-celled organisms that build a calcareous shell around themselves that are about the size of a grain of sand, and that's about his lower limit as well. But they come from the deep ocean, so, like, unless he's like, I think, you know, it's line of sight-ish. Like, even if it's underground, if it's within the distance that he could see if the ground was not in between him and the fossil, he can feel that the fossil's there. So, I don't know, 100 yards or so, depending on how good his eyesight is.
Well, all right, then.
Thanks for being a patron, James White. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can get your superpower live on the show at the $5 or higher level. Thanks to everyone who does so. And you could just, 5 minutes ago, just hear the email not happening. So we're going to skip that. But if you want to write us in, contact@iFanboy.com.
Can I mention?
Yep.
You hear the rapper.
Are you having cookies?
I had a choco pie. We had snack talk, snack corner.
Oh, that's better than email.
Orion brand choco pie since 1974 with marshmallow filling. I texted Josh about the fact that I'd purchased an oatmeal cream pie, which was one of my preferred Tiny Deborah snacks from my childhood. And it was in my car and I lost it. There's a oatmeal cream pie somewhere in my car. I don't know where it is. It's eventually, this was a double stacked one. Okay. It's eventually going to be a real problem for me, I imagine. So instead, I was out to lunch with a buddy today, and we were getting pho out of Vietnamese place. I noticed they had a stack of choco pies, and I was like, can I buy one of those choco pies? Because I need a snack to talk about on the podcast I'm doing later today. And she said, no, they're not for sale. And I said, okay. And then when I was
they're
checking out,
for
she was
sale.
Like, they had a stack of choco pies. They weren't for sale. And then when I went to pay up, she was like, all right, here you go. You can have a choco pie. I think she probably thought I was going to give it to my son or someone close to me. But no, I ate it myself. And it was delicious. Orion, choco pies.
Why would she assume you're not going to eat it?
I don't know.
Yeah, I have a lot of questions.
Snack Talk.
Why were they there if not available? Because they were not labeled for individual sale.
But I don't
were
know.
They there to like be given to folk?
Well, they were also there was a big plate. This is like a little hole in the wall pub place in DC. Like if you guys are pub guys and you want to come to DC, I'll take you there. I'm talking to Josh and Connor. That offer does not extend to everyone listening.
That word needs more sounds to it. It's an exhalation more than it is a word.
You sound like Charlie when he's talking about like the spa and spaghetti in Always Sunny.
What is the spaghetti policy on this show?
It's not allowed. You could have pho or no pho. So I just finished a delicious bowl of pho. I was trying to pay up and the woman was like, here you go. And she handed it to me. She didn't say just take one, but it was on a plate with apples. So it was just apples and chocolate
pies. Were there apples for sale?
I didn't ask because I was so thrown off by the choco pies not being for sale. Do you guys know what I'm talking about with the choco pies though? Like it's like two. It's almost an inverted s'more. It's like a soft. It's a marshmallow center, two very soft crumbly graham crackery type, almost cookies.
I see what it is.
And then covered in a thin layer of chocolate.
It is a s'more. It's a s'more basically.
Inverted.
Is it a brand?
Orion is the brand. I'm not just saying my name with an O on front. It's the concept.
Yeah, it's Orion.
It's basically a
graham cracker cookie with Oreo dipped in, with marshmallow in the middle dipped in chocolate. It's a s'more, basically.
Right.
I think people who listen to a lot of podcasts, we often have experiences where like, man, I wish I could be a part of this conversation. And I got to be honest, I missed being a part of Snack Talk. And so I wanted to bring a snack to the table. This is my snack.
I do apologize, but were they arranged in such a way that it looked like they were an offering, or was it just like
so it's a hole in the wall pub place, and so like there's a bar, but there's no alcohol. So there's a bar you can sit at to eat your pho and have like a Vietnamese iced coffee or iced tea or whatever. And then there's like some tables, and even the tables are like community seating. And I was sitting at one of the tables, but when I went up to order at the bar. My buddy hadn't gotten there yet, but I had a meeting I had to get to, so I went ahead and ordered for both of us. And I saw the plate of apples and chocolate pies, and I figured you wouldn't want me to bring an apple to this discussion. So I asked, oh, and can I grab one of these chocolate pies? And she just said they're not for sale. And I said, oh, okay, darn. And so I just gave up on the concept of having anything to talk about. And then I went back to the table, and I ate my pho and papaya salad and my Vietnamese iced coffee. And then when I asked for the check, she brought me the check and a chocolate pie because I think she saw how disappointed I was.
Apples for sale?
I don't know. I'll go get pho tomorrow if that's what we have to do.
Is this like, you know how like certain Chinese restaurants, depending on where you are, they'll give you oranges at the end of the meal or something. You know, oranges and fortune cookies.
Right.
So that's like a thing. Is it chocolate pie? Is there a weird story where like the U.S. Army left Choco Pies and now they're huge in Vietnam?
Well, the chocolate, so
they're never to be sold.
But
I've
never seen Choco Pies in this. I mean, I've been going to this place for years. This is my like Vietnamese spot in D.C. Julie and I have been going there for a really long time. Like it was basically the first place we went to after we moved Julie into her apartment before I was even able to move here. And I don't remember ever seeing Choco Pies and apples. And the chocolate pies and apples were in a large bowl on the right end of the bar. And on the left end of the bar, I didn't go investigate, but I'm pretty sure there was a similar bowl of Charleston chews. And I didn't investigate because I'm just like, even if they were Charleston chews, I'm not bringing that to the show. I can bring the chocolate pie to the show. I'm not bringing Charleston chew to the show. I'm just going to lay it out on the line. That's how I feel about it.
All right.
Well, there you go. I liked this show when it was about comics, but sometimes this stuff has
I thought I was supposed to bring a snack. Enough for the whole class. I'll send you each a chocolate pie if I can go back and get pho for two more days in a row.
I feel as if that's not going to be worth the postage.
Contact@fanboy.com is the email you could send in to get an email on the show. Normally we tried, it didn't work this time. Also for Media Explode, if you want to put that in the subject line. Let's talk about other shows and get out of here. I think we're going to make it. We're going to end up with 8 weeks in a row of special shows, Thursday shows. We had last week was Shazam Fury of the Gods review. This past week, right behind this show, is our Booksplode review of Kingdom Come that Josh and I talked about. And then this coming week, I'm thinking it's going to happen. We're going to have the Batman, the Doom, the King of Gotham animated review. So all those, that'll cap our 8 weeks in a row of special shows. And then we turn it right around into April and start again. There you go. Ryan, what's going on with your show?
I do a show called Science Sort Of, and if you want to check that out, you can check it out at sciencesortof.com or wherever you get your podcasts. I interviewed a woman Danielle Claude. She's an Australian, and she wrote a book all about koalas. So if you want to learn more about that marsupial that is not technically a bear, but has a lot of bear-like characteristics, go check out ScienceStorm.com wherever you get your podcast. It may not be out exactly by the time this episode drops, but it's coming soon, if not already available.
I think it would be very funny if your description ended at, I interviewed a woman. I interviewed a woman, guys.
Well, I've interviewed a lot of women over the years, and I know. I know you know, but do they know?
Well, I think they get the joke. They've been listening for a long time.
Fair enough.
That's the point here.
That's my show.
Is this when I talk?
Yep.
Do I talk? All right, here we go. You, dear listener. Yep, that checks out. You can find our library of over 1,200. I think it's closer to 1,300 shows.
Actually, I was looking yesterday at our feed on Apple Podcasts, and it said we had like 1,340 shows. I don't know where those extra shows came from.
Yeah, I've been slipping in some extra shows now and then. They're mostly eugenics based.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
It's called Eugenics and Bagels. It's a new show I do, but I have to put it back in the feed. I backdate them.
You slide so that slide people don't find them.
I'm sorry. You can find our library of over 1,300 shows and counting over at ifanboy.com, wherever it is you get podcasts. It's all available there because of the wonders of the internet, which I don't understand. Follow us at iFanboyComics on Instagram and find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out so you can be prepared. Sometimes you'll see the best of the week in panels. Very occasionally we do something else with that, but not really, if I'm being honest with you. Connor and I are individually on Instagram at CS Kilpatrick and J.A. Flanagan. Ryan is Ryan Haupt on Instagram and still is on Twitter with just Haupt for some reason.
I mean, I haven't deleted my account, but it's a garbage platform for garbage people, so.
Yeah. It used to be all right.
It sure did.
That's where we still are.
Well, there's still plenty of people who are not garbage still using it, but for the most part, it's not great. Subscribe to YouTube.
The garbage people have made it not worth being on.
There you go.
YouTube.com/iFanboys, where you can find our old video shows and as well as this show every week. You can listen to that there. But really, you can just find shows from 2007, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 or so. You can see us young and healthy and vibrant.
Hail.
With glowing skin and
well met.
Shorts.
Shirts that fit well. Shorts. So many shorts. Why didn't anyone tell us not to wear the shorts?
You know who did tell us not to wear shorts?
Ron.
Friend of the show, Ben Simpson.
Oh, he did.
He told me very specifically, why are you wearing shorts? And I was angry with him at the time. But he makes a lot of sense now.
So many shorts.
There's people who are listening and they like their shorts and they're fine with us and they don't know what we're talking about. And they think we're shorts assholes.
I have many pairs of shorts I love and wear all the time. Not sure. On screen.
There you go. I think that's sitting.
Just not a good idea.
Not on camera. Is it the bad?
Not on camera.
Yeah, fair enough.
We have degrees in this, so what the hell? No one ever told us not to wear shorts.
They should have.
They didn't teach us how to light. They didn't teach us how to light, and they didn't teach us not about wearing shorts.
Actually, I may have told this before, and I'm so sorry. I have a very distinct memory of sitting. Connor and I went to TV school, and there was like a big studio inside, and they had me sit down so they could test the lighting.
Which they didn't teach us how to do.
And I sat there for a very long time until finally they came over the thing and they were like, I'm sorry, we're actually having a lot of trouble white balancing on your legs. And I'm not making this up at all. And they went over to like the engineering and like people were twisting knobs, or whatever. And they could not white balance my legs without them blowing out on video. That is 100% true.
Oh, that was good. That made the whole week worth it. And that might have been just for me, but it was funny. Oh, God.
Which is that we're having some trouble here with your legs.
Anyway, thanks for listening and writing a review or leaving a star rating wherever you do listen, Apple Podcasts or Spotify or however you get your podcasts. If you can leave us a review, that'd be awesome. Whatever review you want. As always, don't judge the show by a single episode. Judge it by the aggregate. 18 years of shows.
feel like you keep bringing that up when I'm on the show.
No.
Well, I think that what you're suffering for is you did 2 weeks in a row. You're fine. There's nothing.
What I'm suffering for is doing 2 weeks in a row?
No. It's like you're doing the 2 weeks in a row. The second week in a row, you know, you're tired. You're not conditioned.
If you guys think that you're the sole reason I'm tired.
No, I... Honestly, you are not the problem. I'm almost positive I am, because I'm like, Ryan, no, don't get off topic. And then I'm like, hey, by the way, here's this memory that's unrelated.
No, listen, I didn't say a goddamn thing while you told your white balance story. So yeah, let's listen.
You were eerily silent.
Yeah.
All right. That's this week's show. It was an interesting one. We learned a lot. We cried. We laughed.
We grow. We changed.
And there were things that happened that were unexpected.
All right, let's hug it out, you guys.
I'm Connor.
I'm Ryan.
We're so lucky we get to do this, aren't we?
See you next week.
All right.